This show is part of the Goblin Broadcast Network, mate. You probably knew that, though.
Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on. We got a long show for you today, so I'm just going to let it go on into it. Not much going on our end, as I wanted to reiterate that in about 2 weeks there might not be a show because Nathan is getting hitched. Again, send him your best wishes. And a reminder to everyone that our website is up at www.canadiancrusaders.com now. We're still part of the Fistful of Comics game group. You can still go, or podcast group, excuse me. You can also still get us at the canadiancrusaders.fistfulofcomics.com. I'm just going to let us go into it. We're getting near the end of our world-building series, so enjoy.
Maybe, just maybe my boys can stop me from getting the book. Yeah, maybe I'm a Chinese jet pilot.
Aw, welcome, welcome. Come on in, please, please. Have a seat, warm yourself by the fire, and listen to the friendly minstrel's song. What? You've come seeking the tome? Well, you are in luck. I am the keeper of the tome. And what would you do with this mighty podcast? Oh, good, good. You have the right idea. You see, the tome is a source for expanding your understanding of Dungeons and Dragons and what various books have to offer. The tome's knowledge is endless when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons. So sit, listen, and become a sage of great renown. The Tome is a Dungeons & Dragons review podcast focused on official content. You can find The Tome at http://thetome.podbean.com or search for The Tome on iTunes.
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
The legends of your people, mythology, the creation.
It's one of those things that when you go to create it, there's just so much ephemeralness.
Right.
There's just so much there that you could possibly do that basically it's really a bit big to grasp. Yeah. Basically, all I've done with my myth is when a myth is going to be prevalent for the story, I sit down and I write a basic summary of it and I put it out there into the game.
Right.
Because there's just, like, with my game session, with my game setting, there's how many settings? There's like 10 different ages?
Yeah.
12 different ages? Each different age has different mythology.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to sit down and write that much mythology, I better be putting it in a book and selling it.
Oh, I'm not saying write it all out. I personally like the idea of we're sitting there in a game.
They write it up as you need it, basically.
Yeah, you need it, or somebody makes a knowledge check.
It's just
off the top of your head, and you're like, that's a good idea. And you write that down and add it later on. I think that's even better. Not to mention, some players like having legends about their characters after the fact.
Yep, most of my games.
Like in your character, in your game, some of the characters before ours became some of the gods as well as some of the legends.
Right.
I'm hoping that with the new characters, that happens too.
Sure.
Because
the way I was doing it is with my game is I was running it as a way to build a history for the game.
There is usually legends and myths about the previous game's characters. Depending on the setting, depends on the previous game's characters, whether those characters influenced the previous age or if they were in that same age in an earlier time.
It's part of the reward.
It's like in both of your games, you deal with a lot is the rich oral tradition that actually would ensue.
Yeah,
it's like there are stories about the great Jess General guy who's
Jess General Calderon,
32 feet tall and fight and shoots fire out of his eyes.
Yeah, that was
like
that was
I'm 4 foot five and I don't have any fire. What?
Start shooting fire.
He rode. The,
now go up to your legend. Start shooting fire.
Okay.
He rode the great beasts of with feet. That could crush entire armies underneath its single toe. It's like
and you might have to
and his camel going.
I'm a camel.
In a world where communication isn't necessarily the greatest, in one far off realm, you could have a great hero, and by the time the story gets to this little village, it is something that
it's
bad.
Like Paul
it's
like,
yeah, it's you know, where you have like it, you can think of it in that sense. If you're trying to create a hero, a story behind a hero, is you have well this guy he. You know, picked up this old lady from a puddle, and several years later, that story has evolved.
Uh-huh.
You know, thousands of miles away, someone's telling a story about this epic battle
an elderly lady whose health was failing anyways and was going to die, but he couldn't let her be eaten by the or devoured by the
right.
So when your hero comes into the village,
they'll go, "We know you."
When you're looking at mythology, it's exaggeration. It's something you want to look at.
Well, you can walk into that village and you can say, "I am such and such," and then you're the person that the myth was built on, but they're like, "No, you're not." I'm reading this this dime novel, and it says that you should be 20 feet tall, and you should be breathing fire, and you should be flying.
Right.
And you're going, I just need a place to stay. It's cold, I'm wet, I need to change my pants,
Right.
Here's some money, and they're like, whatever.
Well, it's like in my game, you were running across people saying, it's Berg and his faithful companion Gorik,
And they had it all wrong.
Except for the Frost Giant.
Well, except for the Frost Giant. He is awesome. He would have a giant statue somewhere, too. He'd be on some coins, also. Singing coins!
Oh,
they would probably be the special collection. They're the ones that sing.
bagpipe. Yeah,
mythology. The thing about the thing with mythology, though, is there's just so much there, and there's so much that you just can't really grasp because there's just all the stuff that you know that people believe in. You know, they believe it happened. You know, look at some of the mythology that was around for the Greeks and stuff. You know, they had mythologies of dragons and stuff living on islands because they found the bones of prehistoric animals.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. They'd never seen one alive, but since there were bones, they obviously had to be alive somewhere.
Right.
Because these bones, you know, they didn't know what a fossil bone was.
Yeah.
You know? They knew it was a bone, so the animal was dead, but there had to be live ones around, too, because they couldn't all be dead. Also, and when they found, like, fossilized footprints
so obviously
stuff,
centaurs and ogres.
Also,
myths
and legends help your player characters get into adventures.
Yeah. I mean, create a myth or a legend about something that happened in an area and then have an adventure based around finding information about that. What if there's a legend that, you know, 1,500 or 10 generations ago, a god fell from the sky and it crashed into the earth?
Here's something important to think also is even in a fantasy campaign, a legend doesn't necessarily have to be true.
No. And it's funnier when it's not a lot of times.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of players will automatically think, well, I'm in a D&D or I'm in a fantasy setting, and, oh, this legend must be true. It's, well, not necessarily. Yeah. Their artistic license might have been taken.
And not to mention, maybe the villain has been twisting the truth for over 1,000 years.
I mean, the history is written by the people who survive, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Not even the conquerors, the people who survive.
Right.
But there always seems to be, in most myths and legends, there always seems to be a kernel of truth. There's something in that legend that's real.
Yeah.
You don't know what it is, and so basically what you end up doing is you end up following a lot of false starts and dead ends.
Not to mention, if your character picks up...
And also conflicting legends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like legends like, well, in this legend, that he, you know, Hercules killed his family doing this, but well, over here they say he didn't do that, he did this.
There's
also the one legend where it said Hercules went bad and killed his family, and this legend over here says that Hera possessed Hercules, made him go mad and kill his family in different ways.
This is something you also have to think about as a GM. If you create a legend about a sword, and that this sword does all these cool things, and your players go through all the crap and get that sword, and people know about the sword, even if the sword's only a +1 sword...
+1 sword that sheds light as a torch, that's it.
But if you walk up and you hold up that sword in front of an army, and you go... Look at this, and people are like, oh my god, that's the sword of whatever.
They need to have
bonuses of something to say, I'm scared of that.
Right.
Or
the legend says, follow that person to the ends of the earth.
The book Heroes of Battle deals a little bit with that.
Because it might not do what the legend says, but that's part of the coolness
of it. And it goes into how much belief the people of the setting have, too. In a fantasy setting, they're going to be more likely to believe that, but in a modern or a sci-fi setting, they're probably not going to be as susceptible to such things.
They may not.
It's a good way to adapt it. I mean, you could adapt any sort of a legend to a cyberpunk setting. It's like, oh, well, somewhere in cyberspace this happens, you know? It's like, nowadays, it's the rumors. It's buried treasure, hidden treasure, you know, it's like legends that people talk about, and anything can go.
It's like the sword Excalibur. A buddy of mine used to talk about this a lot. We went along the theory that Excalibur, let's just say for argument it existed.
Right.
We thought maybe it was created from some sort of special mineral, maybe something from a comet, something like that. So in a medieval setting, your weapon is so, maybe it was a steel. Maybe it was just full-blown steel. In an era that did not have steel. They had iron.
They had steel.
But I'm talking like...
I'm talking steel.
Our steel. Or some sort of metal.
Well, it goes to Nathan's setting, steel's very rare.
Yeah, but I'm saying, with this type of steel...
That's a big deal.
This sword,
you're talking about a steel weapon. That's a...
Holy cow!
But this,
wow.
This sword, this
must
Excalibur...
Be a king.
This Excalibur can cleave through your armor like it's nothing. Is it magical? In game mechanics, no.
But in the eyes of...
But the eyes of people that are getting hacked apart, it is.
It is, right.
And we talked about that a lot, and it would make sense, especially in a real-life setting. Smiths, people used to think they had magical powers. If you could make a weapon like that, you could do something like that. Your weapon, or whatever you make that has a legend about it, does not have to be magical. It's the story behind it.
Well, that goes some side note on the what you were talking about your gods, Nathan, is is the belief in an object might also endow it with powers as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the actual, the force of will of thousands of people believing in something might bend reality in a magical setting to have it be true.
Because the way magic works is by exerting your willpower over the state of reality to make what you want to happen. You want that fireball. And so what you do is you exert your will. This is how magic works in my world. I should explain that. The mages exert their will on reality. People realize what they're doing, and because of the understanding and the acceptance of magic, people realize that when they're exerting their will, whether those characters realize it or not, they're aiding to that mm-hmm. mage's ability to exert his will to alter reality, to make that fireball exist, because they understand what he's doing.
Which can easily be applied to a legend.
Yeah.
Well, also
and objects as well. A magic item that maybe was just an ordinary ring. So many people believe that it could
one day Jess might wake up and find himself 30 feet tall.
God.
That would be wrong.
The people believe that, but Jess doesn't believe that.
Right.
Jess starts to believe something like that, yes, that is a possibility.
There are legends and myths that come about common things, too, mm-hmm. where the item doesn't develop any magical powers, but like the scepter of the king could be the scepter of justice. It's been in the royal family for, 300 years. It has all these stories. It helps grant wisdom. It's stolen. It's really not a magical item. It could be made out of, all these expensive items, but it's not magical. But it's important. The legends and everything, the stories behind it make it important. So getting that item back could save the kingdom. It's not going to, animate the dead. It's not going to do anything like that. It's
not
going to
make you wiser. It's not going to make you pass correct judgments.
It's a symbol of something.
It's sort of the placebo effect.
Yeah.
And it's important for the kingdom. And that's just as epic as keeping that
legend alive is important to that government.
Yeah.
Or the characters
or the religion or whatever.
The character who has a legend and he's never dies.
Right.
Well, it turns out he does die, but there's a whole group of people that look like him or wear masks, like a Zorro legend type thing.
Or maybe his children.
Yeah, his children carry it on. And that's interesting. It adds to your world. You throw gods in there. They have all their myths and legends. It just, all this adds to the world and helps your players suspend their disbelief
mm-hmm.
and enter your fantasy world to help you actually enter it and have a little bit more fun. It's a little bit more fun to say, to ask your GM, well, what about this forest? Is it just a bunch of trees or... If I make this knowledge check, what is this? Well, this forest is such and such, and here's the story behind it. Or this lake is such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Locations, items, people.
Everything has a story to tell. You just have to.
And it's even okay. It's even okay if you say this is a story everyone would know.
And it might just be a local story that locals know. But
for the player, the players don't have
that's
to
the nature of society,
right
is nature of people. Yeah. They're going to come up with stories to explain things.
You could even come up with a story that says, well, your characters would know this. And they've known this their whole lives, but you as players didn't. That's fine.
Right.
You could say, well, you walk
and
up...
Don't be like me. Don't feel annoyed when you have to do things like that. I mean, your players don't have the time, and they're not going to sit and memorize your Bible of stuff for your world. They don't have the time, and you don't have the time to
it's
do it
harder
for them.
Not,
you know?
If they do that, then
they got problems and they're stalking you.
They need to publish it into a book so that it can be used for future reference for the rest of the game center.
It's hard enough to get players to read simple rules
mm-hmm.
on a player's handout that is in their character sheet.
They have player's handouts in our character sheet?
I will throw something at you. This hasn't come up with my group lately. I'm just throwing that out.
That's because we like to read
the
stuff you give us.
You're doing the same thing where you create something, and we're all like, what the fudge sickles are you talking about, Ethan? Well, if you look in your character sheet...
Oh!
You mean this was in here this whole... Yeah, I spent 2 weeks writing this, and you need to read that.
See, I always read those because invariably you throw hints in there on what we're going to be doing in the game, and any help is welcome.
That's why occasionally you both have probably done it where you're just like, somebody asks a question, you just point.
Yeah, I just point to
the player's handbook. Why are you pointing? No. That thing of paper, it's in there. I'm not asking you to take the SATs. I'm asking you to glance at that sentence that says, You are worshiping this god. You are a cleric of this god.
Oh.
That's why I'm a cleric, and that's why I picked a cleric, and I worship Paylor? Oh, God!
I thought I worshipped Grumsh.
I've never had it that bad, but... But, I mean, you don't have to have him read everything, but if you put in that character handout...
Yeah.
It's like the one you did where we were like, you gave us the histories of why we got arrested. That was great.
Yeah.
That's just fun. That's just fun.
And it's like, extra work. I stole some food and escaped from those people and ended up, like,
that's
taking
we're
that hell, lady to bed.
How we ended up in Hell's
Park. Like, Lord's daughter or something.
That was one that we ended up in Hell's Park.
Hell's Park prison.
Not Hellspike, which Watsy put out.
Hell's Park came out a lot earlier.
Makes you wonder if they actually listen in on people's ideas. They have
strange microphones.
Yeah. They have transmitting devices.
We're
going to
start
wearing
tinfoil hats.
They bug the books. That's it. They bug all the players' handbooks.
Oh, man,
I've got to
tear my books apart.
And then they listen to our ideas and they modify them slightly so that we don't think they're actually stealing our stuff.
Well, they didn't do his very well. They just changed one word from Hellspar to Hellspike.
It's the same thing inside, isn't it?
Like, I don't know. I've never...
I just saw it. It's one of those fantastic locales books they put out, and it's Hellspike Prison. It's like
hey! We were in Hellspar Prison.
It was probably scarier than this place.
I think I pointed it out to Jeremy and made a good laugh, but I think at some point I'll have to just get it for you and just cross out Hellspike and put Hellspar in. There you go.
Yeah. But I personally believe the religion part, the soul part, the myths part, while I'm not stating you need to sit down and write everything up, it's important
to have a basic general gist.
Basic general gist. Maybe read some mythology books on your own so you understand how it works.
Yeah. We should let them know what kind of books that they should be on the lookout for. There's a great Encyclopedia of Gods book.
Oh, the Encyclopedia of Mythology, Encyclopedia of Gods. Those books are so useful.
Yeah, the internet's a great place to look for God information.
Even if it doesn't have anything to do with real life in the sense of this is not what the people actually believe, it's all just completely made up.
Go to your local library
for God's sake.
Not many people go to the library anymore, and they have so much stuff.
Yeah.
And it's free, guys.
Yeah, if you don't want to actually leave the house, there's Project Gutenberg, which has tons of stuff, too.
There's so many stories out there.
Yeah, going to the library and actually checking out a book, you may find the same information online, but it's going to be cut and dry. A lot of those books will have representations of the artwork of the idea behind what
this stuff. That's such a great thing to think about.
Amazing.
When you're doing your deities, I'm working on a list of deities. It's really slow because I procrastinate a lot, but...
And you have a ton of gods.
And he's picky.
And I'm picky. I keep getting rid of things. Pictures.
And you smell funny. And
Yeah.
We all do, though.
I'll throw something at you later. Anyway, but use pictures.
All those locusts we were killing last night.
I enjoy opening a book or a handout. And I'm not saying you have to do color printouts for everybody. But I think it's neat when you pull out a handout for your god. You're playing a cleric, or maybe just a follower, and it shows the holy symbol and the god, what they think the god looks like. That's cool. Whether you do the artwork yourself or borrow it from somebody else.
For those of us who can't draw.
Yeah. I mean...
Like me.
Does his editing. He's edited some holy symbols. It's so neat to say, hey, what does this holy symbol look like? Brings it up on his screen, and we're like, so if we see that holy symbol, we know that we need to run away.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
You see this holy symbol, you run faster.
And this one, we can run two and give it a hug.
Yes.
But not this one.
Great books on mythology. It's the Encyclopedia of Mythology. Mm-hmm. Take a look. I'd say take a look at any religious texts.
There's a really good book I read once, if you're interested in looking at a basis of like Egyptian style stuff. It was called Egyptian Gods and Magic.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name of the author. I think you pointed me to it.
I don't remember the name of the author. It was a good book, though.
Yeah, that was an incredible book. Because it talked about like the daily magic that Egyptians believed in using and stuff like that.
Now, that's something to point out. In Egyptian culture, ancient Egyptian culture, the priests and things would use rituals to control the gods to do things for them.
Right.
So that's something you have to look into.
That's how important you want your clergy to be.
Exactly. Do you want your...
Are they... the conduit to your gods, or are they...
They command the gods.
Command the gods, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is all important.
Do you pray to your gods at home, and then for the real stuff, you go to the priests for to pray for the gods?
Are your gods good to you? Do the gods just go, oh, it's people?
And then you could also run into the... You have the crooked priests who are, you know, using it to steal money from the coffers, et cetera.
And also, one thing we kind of need to throw out, do your gods know everything or not?
No. Yeah.
I mean, I personally say my gods know a lot, but they don't know everything.
My gods know the combined knowledge of everyone that has faith in them. So apparently, or obviously off of that statement, they don't know everything. They know a lot. Yeah, they know a lot.
Compared to the normal person.
Yeah. You're talking about the mass amalgamation of the knowledge of on some of those gods, a million
they
people.
They can see out of the eyes of their followers from holy sites. But do they know everything? No. Because if they did, then there's really no...
There was no need... There'd be no need for people.
So...
There'd be no need for followers.
If you're going to use any real-life stuff, please ask your players. Have some compassion and some just...
Play it safe.
You don't want to offend. Mm-hmm. You don't want to bother...
And take into account where you're playing, too. If you're going to be playing at a con or playing at a game store, you need to take that into account.
Because you have to understand that there's going to be other people walking through that you might offend.
Like age groups, like if I'm going to run a game for younger kids, if they ask about a god, I'll say, there's a god of war, or there's a god of this, but we don't need to go into anything else.
Right.
Yeah.
You're a priest. If you want to be a priest, fine. But it's only when you get into, I think it was we age, I noticed our games have gotten more in-depth. On different things.
In like some ways, darker.
Religion, on faith, on all sorts of different concepts. We bring them up. Maybe not like in a serious necessarily all the time, but we do touch upon those things. So really base it on age also.
Yeah, you're not going to talk to a kid about the orc god Grumsh.
You're not going to talk about how his followers rip out their eye and stuff.
You're
not you don't even touch upon the hells, things like that. You just say...
When you die, there's bad places you can go, or there's good places
touch
you can
upon
go.
That.
Another thing real quick on religions is how each religion is going to look at heaven and hell.
Do you have to have multiple heavens?
I mean, in D&D, you have the nine hells, but it's like, is that hell, or is that just a plane of existence, you know?
Yeah. And I've,
life and death, it's like, what happens when you die?
That's important.
That's something you want to think about if when you're doing a game, and it's like, if a follower of one deity dies, what happens to them? Does the same happen to a different deity's follower? You know?
Or does each god have its individual plane?
Right.
Where everything goes.
Do they stand on islands for all eternity, surrounded by water? And the gods aren't there until they get bored and finally they just give up their existence and just disappear.
Where the hell did that come from?
Oh, we know that book.
Ghostwalk.
God!
I have not read that book.
Ghostwalk. Wouldn't recommend that book.
It had some good things, but if I was in that world, I would lead the souls of the dead into the realms of the gods, and I would kill them, every single one of them.
Good,
because that's even their priest, and some of the priests are still stupid enough to worship on them. And I'm like, even Oblivion might be better than this, because this is just the one example was this child without anybody to like take care of them when they appear in the afterlife. Mm-hmm. Well, if they died young, they have nobody to take care of them, so they just fade out because there's no point. I'm like, reading this going, oh my god, this is depressing, I'm done.
Wraith the Oblivion for D&D.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, because he usually writes very good books, I just didn't.
Yeah.
Who?
I don't know, Monty Cook co-wrote that book.
He co-wrote it.
But I have to guess he came up with the idea, because that book came out right after he left Watsy. So I think that was an idea he had, and someone else took off with it.
It may have been.
But I don't know. I'm not speaking on record there. I have no idea.
We'd have to ask Monty Cook about that if we could ever get an interview. It'd be cool to get an interview with him. We talk with him every year that we go to Gen Con.
Mm-hmm.
He's a cool guy. Yeah. If you haven't met him and you go to Gen Con, be sure
to go this year.
This
might be his last year of going as an exhibitor.
Ask him if he can listen to our podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But definitely, if you get a chance, and if you're there this year, try to get a chance to talk to him. He's an incredibly intelligent person.
Yes. I don't think there's much else we can talk about right now. So we'll be back after these wonderful messages.
Ah, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome to your dungeon.
It's the PAX. The G23 Paxilon Hydrochloride.
It went out on a broad wave, sir. Everyone who wants it has it.
You need to control this damage. Start a discrediting campaign to deal with these.
Sir, we feel you should know. There are other projects.
Get ready.
I would like to introduce myself. I am Gerald, your hostage.
To live at the edge.
What do you mean he's dead?
Just because I ain't a nice person, Sugar, doesn't mean we can't deal.
This attack wasn't random. It was selected.
Surviving in the verse has never been harder.
You'll make a fine Alliance officer someday.
For a brown coat like you. After Serenity, the ongoing campaign, the story has a new season.
What do you mean he's dead?
Hey, what do you guys mean? Is he dead?
Is he dead?
He's dead, isn't he? What do you mean by that?
AfterSerenity.com.
Caution, you are approaching the periphery shield of Vortex 4. Caution, caution, you are approaching the periphery shield of Vortex 4.
Well, we're back with the wonderful three-parter, and on today's three-parter, Jeremy's got, what, is it rant or a rave?
A rave.
Jeremy's going to rave for us. I've got a review, and Nathan's got character. Well, he is a character.
Yeah, I don't got it, I am.
Yeah. But we're going to go ahead and start with the rave this time with good old Jeremy. Go, Jeremy.
Once my perfect world was gone, I knew you ruined everything in the nicest way.
The rave.
It's all you, man.
Okay, I want
take
to talk
to the,
about...
Take it to the streets, man.
I would like to talk about
you put
Supernatural.
Like
now, some of you people out there have been watching Supernatural for a long time.
Whoa.
I don't watch TV on a normal basis, except random crime shows once in a while and random History Channel shows. But I don't watch series for different reasons. Anyway, I'd seen a few of Supernatural... here and there. And, so, last Sunday, when normally we'd be gaming, unfortunately we had some cancellations. Nobody's fault.
Hangover. Except for Nathan.
Yeah, it's mostly Nathan's fault. But...
It was my fault. You guys are the ones that scheduled the bachelor party that night before, where everybody stayed up till like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Excuses.
Details.
No, and Ethan brought over Supernatural the first season.
Rock on.
And, so Robin, my fiancé, Robin and I started watching it, and, I've gotta say, it's pretty awesome. I've only seen parts of second season one, sweet. My favorite part about it is, how they're from Lawrence, Kansas. That's superior. In many, many ways, because I'm from Lawrence, Kansas.
Unfortunately, when they go back to Lawrence, it doesn't look anything like Lawrence.
It's filmed mostly in Canada or something like
yes.
that.
Yes, so it's cheaper to film there.
It's cheaper to film in Canada. Either way,
just like
I,
most
too...
Of Jericho is filmed in Texas.
Yeah, don't care. I, too, wanted to be a monster hunter, and am from Lawrence. Unfortunately, that would entail, like, my poor, unfortunate mom being caught on fire and...
Yeah,
that would bother
stapled through a ceiling.
Yeah, that would bother me. And
let's not have that happen to your mom.
Yeah, I don't really want
yeah.
that to happen.
Yeah, I like your mom.
But, so, instead, we get
then,
Supernatural.
Then you're not an infant anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But instead of that, we get Supernatural. And what I like about it is it reminds me of the good shows from the X-Files with...
The non-mythology shows.
Yes.
That didn't deal with the alien conspiracy.
Though, if they do an alien, I think that'd be great. That's Supernatural.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going
to
do that.
Yeah, you also have to remember, I'm sure Ethan has mentioned this before.
It's more of a folklore
show. Isn't it like two of the writers that were in X-Files are doing Supernatural?
Not two of the writers. David Nutter is one of the executive producers, and he did Millennium. He was one of the guys who did Millennium.
That was an awesome show.
For those of you who don't know the basis on Supernatural, is basically what happens is you find out that way back when, when the one kid, Dean, and his younger brother, Sam, well, basically their mother was stapled to a ceiling and caught on fire, and their father had to save them. And this, we haven't got far enough in the episode, so I don't know if his father was already training them to be monster hunters,
no,
or if the training happened after the stable caught on fire.
The training happened afterwards.
So they become monster hunters, and I say monster hunter, but it's kind of more than that. Dean is quite willing in some ways to shoot people, or at least thinks about that. But I just love all of the different stories. They have the Hook Man. Everybody knows the Hook Man story. They have Bloody Mary.
Everybody knows
Bloody Mary.
The Death episode is really cool, too.
They have Reapers.
I don't think he's made it that far.
Actually, we did... They Controlling the Reaper?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's an awesome episode.
We've seen that one. They have... Well, this isn't really monsters.
Well, I like how they have different types of spirits.
They have different types
of
spirits.
It's not just a ghost, you know. It's, you have different types of ghosts. It sticks much more to urban legend.
They have
and
urban
how,
legends.
You know, the
demons.
Folklore is the woman in white, you know, that's sort of legend. I really like that.
Now, one thing you notice when you're watching the show is the entities in it, while they have rules, they are very loose on those rules. Such as, well, Bloody Mary in that episode. She only goes after people that are guilty of a murder, basically.
Of she goes after people who she thinks is guilty
of a murder. Well, one of the characters in the show, just a character that came on to the show, actually told her boyfriend she didn't care if he committed suicide. And then he did. And Bloody Mary went after it. That seems a little bit shady on the whole rules
right.
of spirits, but they're spirits, you know.
Yeah.
Just like people, they'll break rules.
The episodes work. They're very fast-paced. You get a lot of stuff in it, but they're very fast-paced, so if you don't have a lot of attention span...
The soundtrack rules.
The soundtrack is awesome. The car is awesome. Did I mention they're from Lawrence, Kansas? That's awesome.
That's three shows on TV now that have Kansas mm-hmm. somewhere in the show.
And
I'm sure a lot of other shows have Kansas somewhere in the show.
I believe you can watch like
the
newer episodes, or you can watch some of the episodes online, I believe.
Yeah.
So please go catch them.
They might have actually taken... I think they actually took them down off the CW. You can actually get them on iTunes now.
Well, there you go.
$2 an episode.
You can also download them on
the older
Xbox
brother,
Live for 150 points.
Dean, older brother, is really funny. He's a complete and utter jackass. But he's so funny.
Dean's the man.
He is the... I believe he's the gun-toting strongman of the group.
Yeah,
Sam or Sammy...
That.
Developing psychic powers. He's the mental individual. He knows a lot more than Dean.
He's the more spiritual one.
He's the more spiritual one. He's more, you know, he's more hippie-ish.
The chemistry, though.
Yeah, the chemistry
between
is great.
The two lead actors, Jerry Padalecki
and Jensen Ackles. The father is great.
Are great.
The women in this show are all hot.
Yeah, it is a CW, or formerly the WB show, and I generally hate the WB, but yeah, the women
matter.
On that show. This is entirely just us being fanboys and men, but damn.
It doesn't matter where they go, they're all hot.
I like the one with the painting with the one with the, I can't think of the name of the episode, but the one with the painting of the family.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That woman.
We just finished the last...
That raven haired beauty.
We finished...
I don't know her name, but I'll tell you what.
We finished Shadows.
Oh, you finished Shadows? That's a good one.
That's the last one we saw. And the thing I like about it is they take all the folklore, just a simple thing. Churches will either destroy or repel a lot of evil spirits. I think that's neat.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of shows is kind of... You know,
salt, holy water.
Salt, holy water.
It's that the urban legend thing. It's the folklore. It's really cool.
My hope is that they start playing a little bit... They play on... the good and the neutrality, because death is in it, and death is not evil.
Yeah.
The Reapers are not evil. They get pissed off. Don't piss them off, because they can kill you.
Yeah,
they do. They're not evil. But everything else is. And I'm hoping, this is the one thing about my rave, I'm hoping the show does play along the lines of some goodness. Not just the human goodness. I would like a little bit. You have all the supernatural evil.
Mm-hmm.
I would like a little bit of supernatural goodness.
Have you gotten to the episode where they go back to Lawrence?
Oh, that's, yeah, we've already seen that. There was a little bit of supernatural goodness in that.
The weird thing about that episode, though, is the next episode, they go to Rockford, Illinois, which is where my mother moved to. That was just weird.
Is that the one with the lake?
No, it's the one with the asylum.
The asylum that actually is a real asylum, but doesn't exist in Rockford,
it's
Illinois.
It's not Rockford, Illinois!
Yeah.
But
no, it's like,
but anyway,
supernatural.
Miles south.
Great show. You know, you should probably, you know, watch a few episodes. I'd recommend buying the first season.
Yeah, we did.
It's $40 for the set, and it's worth every penny.
Like an extra DVD of extras, isn't it?
I don't know if you can still get the one. I bought it at Best Buy, and I got the extra DVD.
Becca, my fiance, bought it for me. It's an awesome show.
It's an awesome show.
I think if
it's still sealed.
And it has been renewed for season 3. So
I think if they stick with the normal, you know, urban legends, you know, monsters, things that live in your closet and such, that it'll be great. I still believe they should do an alien episode, but I can see where that might cause problems. They have so many things they could do. They could do the goat eater.
Chupacabra?
Yeah, they could do that.
El Chupacabra.
I know they're building up a demon thing.
They could do a Mansquito.
They could do a Mansquito. I'm hoping, though, that the whole demon story isn't so overwhelming.
They've talked about that. The creators talked about that. He actually plans on wrapping that up at some point and then just going in another direction.
What's interesting, I don't know how much of the second season you've seen so far.
Not
but
very much.
Pretty much the second season, the whole demon thing's been fairly light.
It's been heavy in some episodes, and there is some... You haven't seen the entirety of the second
season.
No,
I've seen it.
There is an overarching thing with
And
it.
I know
well,
on
yeah,
the second
season,
they touch upon other slayers very, very briefly.
They do a lot more in the second season with other slayers.
Yeah, like the bar. That bar is awesome.
Bar, yeah.
It's basically like a stopping point in the United States for all the hunters.
Please, you know, check it out. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So,
I agree.
That's what I got.
Very cool show.
The review.
I recently was given the opportunity to play the Warhammer tabletop fantasy game. Now, I have known about Warhammer for many years. You know, being a many year veteran of role playing games, I know about Warhammer and I have seen Warhammer, but I had never played Warhammer. Well, jumping into Warhammer, you know, obviously you have your different armies. You can have the Bretonians, the Tomb Kings of Khemri, the Hordes of Chaos, Dwarfs, Empire, Dark Elves, Lizard Men, Orcs and Goblins, Skaven, High Elves, Wood Elves, Vampire Counts, and Beasts of Chaos. Me, personally, I went, hey, Chaos, they look cool. I remember them from HeroQuest, so I play them. Now, I like how the game is balanced out where you have... where one army isn't too overpowering, except for maybe the Lizard Men, I guess. But mostly, all of the armies are rather... They're balanced with something that they're really good at, but they're also very vulnerable on some other front.
Yeah, like ogres are super strong, but you get very few of them to field.
Yeah. Or how Chaos is very good in melee, but has nothing for range. Anyway, it's an interesting game. I think it's a bit rules-heavy on a few things, but it needs to be. It's a miniatures game. I got to get used to a miniatures game because I've never played one before. I'm not really going to talk much about the system because I don't know it that well. Our resident other people here can talk about it if they want, but the basics of it is it's just a world at war. You know, you have Warhammer and the realm of chaos is intruding upon the Northlands and trying to destroy the world.
Without the chaos, though, there would be no magic.
Yeah,
that is true.
It's an interesting setting, and I like how it plays. As far as gameplay and actual play is, you probably need to have a bit. You have to step away from the whole tactics thing and think more within the rule structure, because using tactics, like, you can't go off and read a copy of Sun Tzu's The Art of War and go and then just clean and mop up on a Warhammer game, because it just wouldn't work that way.
Your units aren't designed for you to be able to break apart and plant.
It doesn't work like that. It's a bit more, it's a lot more structured, a lot more stringent on what you can do. The best way, I think, to learn how to play it is to just go play it, honestly. I read the rules, and, you know, I still don't understand half of what I read. But, you know, your local game store, I would bet that they have a Warhammer League or people who play Warhammer there, and you can go learn from them and sit in on games and sit and play, like, a 500-point game with someone else, you know, called Lunchhammer. It's an interesting thing, and really, if you want to choose an army that is that appeals to you as far as, hey, they look neat. Don't go hunting for an army that, oh, okay, well, let's see. I sort of disagree with the idea of picking an army that is the type of tactics you want to play. Is, you know, pick an army you just
like the look of,
and go that route. It's the best way to get into it, because there's so much stuff there. Problem with Warhammer, of course, is it's costly. It's very expensive. There are ways you can cut costs. You can actually look into eBay and things like that, or picking up an old copy of Battle Masters, for those of you who understand what Battle Masters was. You can actually get some Warhammer figs out of that for fairly cheap, if you can find a Battle Masters cheap now.
You can also buy the Battle of...
Battle of Skull Pass starter set for Warhammer. It's sort of the a jumping ground from a board game to Warhammer. It's sort of Warhammer in a box for $45. You get a miniature army that basically it's a two-player thing. We get you everything you need to play. It's a very good deal, actually. For $45, it's a really good deal.
And it comes with a miniaturized rule book.
And it comes with a miniaturized rule book and a little scenario to play out with some figs of goblins and dwarves to fight, and little measuring sticks and templates and everything you need to play, basically. I would recommend if you're thinking about getting into it, pick that up because it's $45. It's the best buy that you'll get, and you can actually buy just that and play. If you want to get more into it, obviously you can start buying blister packs, start buying army boxes, start buying sets of whatever you need. I would highly recommend that you get into miniatures painting, because all the miniatures are unpainted and you have to paint them yourself.
Especially if you're going to field them at tournaments. Your miniatures have to be painted.
If you're
going to
field them at tournaments, you have to paint them.
And they all have to be official Warhammer minis at tournaments.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But if you're playing amongst friends...
Random Lego guy
I mean, if you're like us, we don't play in tournaments. Just play with friends. Use proxy figures, you know. I mean, have fun. Play with the rules and make them work for you. Overall, I think Warhammer is pretty cool. I don't know. The first game I played, I got horribly stomped, but, you know, that happens.
He's also playing against someone who's been playing pretty much nonstop for, 10 years?
No, he's only been playing for 5 years.
5 years.
But he's actually very good at it. But anyway, it's a fun little thing, but it's definitely a thing that could eat up a lot of money and take up a lot of your time. Just go very easy on it, and if you buy something, and if you want to get into miniature painting, buy it, paint it, and then buy something else. Don't go out and buy 400,000 miniatures, and then you're going to be stuck looking at a bunch of gray miniatures and going, man, I should have painted these.
Unless you're in the same boat as me, you have all the paints, and you can paint them, but the way your money system works is you have chunks of money at specific points in time, and so anything you want to buy, you have to buy in that period of time. Buy what you need, and then revise what you want, and pick a few of the things that you want to supplement what you need.
See,
and then paint them.
I don't agree with how Nathan does it, but that's how he does it. How I do it, I'm just going to get one thing at a time. But anyway.
I don't recommend Warhammer for kids.
No.
I'd say don't get into Warhammer unless you're 14 or over.
I remember going into the gaming stores and parents asking about Warhammer and me just going, shaking my head, going, no, don't do it. Because it's not like, if you want to do that, go with HeroClix, go with...
Mage Knight.
Mage Knight.
HeroClix, Mage Knight, anything like that. Anything from WizKids. Yeah. The D&D minis, you know?
Warhammer, you have to clean most of the minis. You have to paint them. You're dealing with painting. Also, you may... I love the game. It's great. It's a lot of fun. When I played it, it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It eats your money like crazy.
I mean, if you're looking for younger kids or you know, the early teens, Warhammer's a bit much. Go with some board game like Battle Lore or something like that has a lot of figs, but it's actually a self-contained game. That's why this Battle for Scroll Pass is a good thing to look at if you're starting to get into it.
I would look at it, but I would not buy it until... What I would recommend is go down to a friend's house that already has some, or go to a gaming store and watch one of their tournaments, or ask if the store has figs that you can use for one of their games, and play it. Play it for a couple of months, then buy it, because
absolutely certain that this is what you want to dump money into.
We're not talking about like just a $30-$40.
We're talking like $80, $120, hundreds of dollars that you dump into this.
A starter battalion set, which is basically enough points to field what's called a warband, which is approximately 500 points, is going to cost you anywhere from $80 to $100, depending upon the army.
Yeah.
Then on top of that, for each additional unit, which gives you an additional unit of people, anywhere from 2 to 15 miniatures, or models as they call them, to add to your army, is going to cost you anywhere from $28 all the way up to $50 per unit. To give you an idea, when you go to tournaments, most people in the tournaments field 2,000 points. So to get enough points, you'd have to have at least 4 of the battalion starter boxes, which is already putting you up to $400
for a single army. And sometimes you can actually go on eBay, and what's funny about it is every once in a while you can find a fully painted army for that same $400. They will ship it to you for an extra $50. And, you know, I would recommend even looking on the internet, looking at some of the overstock places.
Because they buy them from there.
Because this stuff is stupidly expensive. Yeah. And if you're going to buy it at full price, buy it at your local game store. Yeah. Don't buy it online.
I agree with because I did not do this and I regret it. I agree with Ethan's way of doing it. If you see a fig you like, let's say you're not interested in the game, but you see a fig you like, buy that one fig and paint it.
Yeah.
Just do one at a time, because what you're going to find is once you buy that pack of units, or 30 halberdier guys, it's a unit, so you need to have them all painted before you field them.
They all need to be painted with roughly the same color.
In a tournament or an official game.
Yeah, but you don't feel very good when half your guys are gray.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel the same.
Uh-uh.
And
no, you want
to recommend maybe just buying one blister pack. One blister pack of somebody that you think looks cool.
I recommend buying in moderation. That's how I always like to do it.
I agree with you guys.
Simply.
I agree wholeheartedly with you guys. My situation is a little bit different than the average person's, though. I get tuition reimbursement and stuff like that, and I get remuneration from work for all the money I put into college and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I have large chunks of money that, after all my bills are paid and all my school loans for that month or that semester are paid, I have, you know, like I have like $1,000 left over. Well, that's all the money I've got to spend until the end of the next semester, which is 6 months away, or 4 months away. So I buy what I want, and then I buy I buy what I need, then I buy some of the little things that I want to supplement it until I have that cash flow coming again. So, because I have that 4 months after I buy all those, I may buy, I bought a battalion set, I bought, you know, two blister packs of some units, I bought a box of this units, but I have 4 months to paint them before I have more money. And if I don't have them painted, you know, I probably won't buy anymore, because if I bought all that I needed and a couple of the figures I wanted, I probably got more than enough points to field anything I want.
Do it in whatever way you want, but,
I agree with them. Listen, this is coming from the person who doesn't do it like they do it. I agree with them. Buy it in very key.
I mean, overall Warhammer, it is fun, it is cool, but
a big table.
Yeah, you need a big area to play it. It's not something that lends itself to apartment living.
And terrain makes it a lot more fun.
And with the terrain
combat,
terrain is cool.
And
also,
build,
talk with your friends, see if they want to get into it, because into it would just get kind of boring.
And also, just as a safety,
do like I did, get your fiance
a safety
to it.
Thing. Yeah. Be very careful with your experiments with various painting or paint removal devices.
Toxic fumes are dangerous.
You don't want one your miniature melting.
Yeah.
Or two, you don't want to create something that catches on fire.
Who did that?
It doesn't matter. All that matters is when you're working with turpentine and paint, and you should be in an airy place.
Yes. Yeah. If when you go to primer the models, most of the primers are done with an aerosol-based spray can.
Yeah. Go outside.
Spray paint them
and
outside.
For God's
spray
sake.
Paint them in a garage. Do not paint them in an enclosed area. You will kill yourself with the toxic fumes. There's actually been a couple people who actually suffered from the fume inhalation that have actually spent hospital time. They talk about it in some of the White Dwarf magazines, which is the magazine for the system.
And
just be careful.
And White Dwarf is a very good magazine if you want to get into this, by the way.
Yeah, read them as well.
Just make sure that when you get it, you realize that you're not that good or you will be depressed.
Yeah. Those people are amazing.
And when you start painting, it's not going to be great. You have to work on it. But that's Warhammer. That's our 3 cents on it. So.
And last but not least,
we've got character.
Well, I am going to talk about my character. And no, he's not an NPC that I created. He's actually a character that I actually created.
Do it. Chew them down. Grind them into dust.
Anyways, we're going to talk about a character that I created for a game that I ran under Ethan and for Mutants and Masterminds. His name was Horatio Hollenbach, an alliteration, apparently. I'll have to take Ethan's word on that because, I didn't really care. But Horatio was
it's an alliteration. It's a classic in comic book lore. Yeah.
Horatio was a very athletic child, great swimmer, went to lots of tournaments for. At the ripe young age of, 14, on a bus trip back from one of the tournaments that he had managed to win in, there was a terrible accident. Everyone on the bus was killed except for him, including his parents.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yep, typical setup. However, that being said, Horatio, although he survived, was crippled. He was paralyzed from the waist down. He could no longer swim. He was taken in by his eccentric uncle, who was crazy, and proceeded to live out his life as a normal person would. He didn't let his physical impairment impede him in his life. And eventually, as time passed on, the surgery came out that they thought could repair the damage done to his spine and give him full use of his legs again. Of course, his uncle being eccentric and rich, which seemed to go together in every situation, decided to spring for the operation. At that same time that he sprung for that operation, was actually the same time that the world had its first encounter with, what were they called?
The radiation wave.
The radiation wave, which started changing people.
The first hit of the radiation wave from the sun.
Energy X.
And he was 16 at this point in time. And the operation was performed on the same day. The operation was a stunning success. As a matter of fact, Horatio found that not only could he use his legs again, but he found that, he was much stronger than he used to be. He could do lots of things that he couldn't do before. He couldn't originally fly. He didn't start off with flying. That was a skill he picked up later on as he continued to mutate from the radiation.
Yeah, most swimmers can't fly. Yeah. Usually it tells using an airplane or something.
Yeah. But Horatio, realizing with his newfound powers, began to hone them and decided that someday, one day soon, he would help the world and be a good person as superheroes began to pop up among the normal people in the world. Thrasher decided that he would don a costume and a cape and the horrible namby-pamby tights and become a superhero. And he called himself Spitfire. Horatio was, or Spitfire.
No relation to the Marvel character, by the way.
What, is there Spitfire? Really?
It's probably copyrighted. They're going to sue you.
Oh, they're going to sue me. To give you an idea, actually I got the name from a song I heard from the Prodigy from their first album, Always Outnumbered, Never Outgunned. There's a song on there called Spitfire. Check out the song. That was my guy's theme song. Horatio Hollenbach is a energy, or actually sun-based energy, paragon. No, he's a paragon. A big brute, had a blast. It was radiation-based, heat, sun radiation-based. Ended up being able to fly, had super strength and strike. Basically, he went in, he was the person they called in to punch people. That was what he did. He wasn't very dexterous. He had a high toughness save. He was designed to take a hit and just absorb it rather than actually get the heck out of the way. Very easy character to play. He was hot-headed. Big surprise. He had a crush on one of the female characters, who was actually being played by my fiancé, who had been a girl that he had a crush on all the way back since he was in grade school, and really hated one of the NPCs because the NPC kept hitting on her in front of him.
Why didn't you give him cancer with your radiation?
I got to do much better than that. He got controlled by a bad guy, and I got to pummel him into unconsciousness. Talk about venting your frustrations in a positive way.
And then you gave him cancer?
I'm sure he'll get cancer, you know, just from being in general proximity of my guy.
As but, well, your whole super party.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's one of those things they're going to have to deal with. But, yeah, he's a very easy character to run. Run him hot-headed. He doesn't have a short fuse, per se. He's not quick to anger, but when he gets mad, he gets really angry and things blow up and people get beat to, you know, to a pulp. But he never kills anybody. Because he sticks to the hero's code. Although he has a problem with language, so you'll need to use the comic code with censored signs a lot, because he's a sign of the times. But definitely an interesting person, can make a good NPC in any Mutants and Masterminds games, because everywhere he goes, destruction and mayhem follows. He lost his apartment, he destroyed half of the Freedom League's base, made new tunnels for the sewers in the basement of the Freedom League. Destroyed an Olympian temple in a mountain.
It wasn't an Olympian temple. It was Medusa's tomb.
Medusa's tomb. With the help of team members, we managed to pummel the living daylights out of that, sending people through pillars and stuff. He's a mass destruction. He's a force on the scale of mass destruction. So use him to destroy large areas, but he doesn't do it intentionally. It just seems to happen. He's like he's got one of his penalties should be destructive fate or something. Everywhere he goes, bad things happen to the buildings around him. His apartment ended up getting teleported into the middle of the Amazon River. He lost his apartment and so did
his whole building.
People. Yeah, the whole building got teleported.
Well, first his apartment exploded. With a small yield nuclear device, and then
actually I managed to throw that into the atmosphere.
That's true, but then the whole apartment complex caught on fire, and then transported into the Amazon and the Nile River,
yeah.
And then back.
Yeah.
And now there's Nile lizard folk living in.
No, but my African cichlids were.
Yeah.
The tank was shattered, and like the last round of combat too, it managed to survive through like what was it, 10 rounds of combat in the last round. Someone got thrown in the building. I think it was, what's his name? Hawkeye? Not Hawkeye. What's his name?
Bowman.
The Bowman. Got thrown into the building by one of the robots and shattered my aquarium. This was the guy I hated.
This was the guy who was hitting on his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or really not his girlfriend. It really wasn't your girlfriend.
It wasn't my girlfriend, but it was
the
girlfriend.
The one you had feelings for. And you never said anything to him, so he just kept doing it. Anyway.
Every time Ethan would go off and start talking about, you know, have him hitting on her, it's like the look of death would appear on my face. And I was like, is that Nathan being met? No, it's Spitfire. He's glaring evilly at the Bowman.
The Bowman's being an ass.
The thing is, the Bowman's always been nice to you, too.
I know. And then I get to pummel him when he got taken over.
Since
I was like,
you're radioactive.
I feel so much better.
Since you're radioactive, there's other evil things that would have happened to him. Not cancer.
Because the funny thing is with how Bowman is and how I run him, he would back off because he doesn't know that you have feelings for him, doesn't know that she has feelings for you.
He's a manly man. Yeah, I don't talk about feelings. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I break things.
But he's a hero.
Bowman's cool.
Yeah, we'll get
by
back
the way, I played him in a tournament game, and I understood where he was coming from because he's not super powered. He just has super ability with his bow. He's human. He gets hit, he goes...
Yeah. His whole thing is not getting hit, but staying far away. But yes, that's Spitfire.
Yeah, that's Spitfire.
Sweet. We'll be back.
I'll buy that for a dollar!
Hello, friends. Tim and John here. Do you harken back to the gaming days of yesteryear? Back when controllers only had two buttons, and there was only two dimensions for you to worry about?
Ah yes, those were magical times.
Well, come relive those halcyon days of yore at 8-Bit and Beyond.
That's www.fistfulofcomics.com/8-bit.
Good night.
And good gaming.
Okay, you people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. And if we're not back by dawn, call the president.
Well, welcome back to Random Encounters. We have some random encounters.
We have feedback again.
Sweet.
Someone fed us. Can you believe it?
Did they send us money?
They fed us after midnight.
Whoa. What happens when you get fed after midnight?
Yeah, you turn into a gremlin, and then we have to kill you and throw you in a blender.
Sorry, I'm back. I had to
okay.
go, you know... stick myself in the microwave.
But you know, it's, whenever you feed him, does that work on time zones? You know, like if it's midnight and you go across the time zone and then feed him, is it not midnight then?
It does.
Yes.
And they can also learn English and occasionally sing songs.
Yeah.
New York!
That's such a great movie.
Yeah, the second one was awesome.
That's just a fantastic
movie. I see you've met my
Jonathan Glover's in that. He's great. But our feedback, first I'm going to hit a feedback I got about 2 weeks ago, and I forgot to mention last time, from Scott Clements.
You're filed.
Okay. From Scott Clements, is, hi guys, I found your podcast and thought you might be interested in this. I'm now prepping to make my first feature film, The Scarlet Avenger, based on my student short.
Cool.
The picture is a rip-roaring tribute to all the 1940s action-adventure serials that inspired movies like Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Rocketeer,
cool.
but with a postmodern slant like The Princess Bride.
Rock on, dude.
It's a Golden Age comic book come to life. You can download the student short here, and I'll put the link in the schnotes. And he's also started a blog that will chronicle his journey to make the feature, which I'll put in the notes. Finally, I was recently interviewed on the Paunch Stevenson Show podcast, where he discusses the making of the short, the planned feature, his love of the old serials, and his adventures in the film biz, working on such flicks as Silent Hill and Doug Liman's new picture, Jumper. I'll put a link to the show in the show notes to that show as well. Hope you enjoy it. Would love to hear from you. Sincerely, Scott C. Clements. P.S. You can also find the short in three separate chapters on YouTube.com, but it looks nowhere near as nice. It's also available at iTunes Music Store as a free podcast. Looks great in the video iPod. This gentleman's from Toronto, Canada, whereas we can be, we're not Canadian, but we could be, he actually is Canadian. So I just wanted to read that real quick and just say, hey, thanks for dropping us a line, Scott. We'll put links to all that stuff in the notes.
Yeah, right
and,
on. I'm making your material, too.
Yeah, this is done, we would like to review this. We'd like to
send it our way.
But, I haven't watched the short yet, but we will. And
definitely.
We'll definitely want to keep
Sounds
posted
like
on that.
Great idea.
Yeah. I love those old 1940s.
The second piece of feedback is a question from someone on the forums called The Pantsless Jedi.
Whoa, where's his pants?
Well, he's wearing a robe, so it doesn't matter.
That's a two-handed lightsaber there, son. Anyway, he says, hey, everyone, I've been listening to your podcast while I waste away hours at work. Data entry sucks, but I can listen to whatever I want. Yep, been there, done that.
We feel you there.
You need to find your pants first.
I'd love to hear everyone's opinions on the various open format role-playing systems, or the systems that can go from genre to genre without any additional books, like Fudge, GURPS, True 20, etc. Do you favor any of the systems over the other? Is there one that stands out as the best or worst of the bunch?
In my opinion, this is that each one has strengths and weaknesses. What you need to do is review each one and find the one that fits best what you want to do.
Right.
True 20 is great.
The ones I know of, obviously, I know of Fudge, GURPS, True 20. D20 is a generic system. You can get the SRD off the internet. There is the Storyteller system from White Wolf, which you can use
then
from
there. Then there's the
BRP. There's the BRP, basic role-playing system. There's any number of them now. As well as Hero, the Hero game system, and the D6 system as well.
Yeah, Tri-Stat.
Tri-Stat doesn't exist anymore.
There's the Lego one.
And there is Lego Wars.
Lego Wars, I think that's what it is.
Brick Wars.
It covers all genres.
That's true.
Each free download.
Yeah. But
each one definitely has strengths and weaknesses. GURPS is great for its ability that, with the basic book, you can do a lot. But with the additional books, the supplemental books,
you can do anything.
Oh,
yeah. GURPS is a real good one to look at because it just, you have so much source material with it.
We had a buddy who ran a Stargate, and it was a lot of fun.
And you could customize that one so well.
I never played Fudge.
I think...
I haven't played Fudge either. I've never played it.
I've heard of it. Fudge uses special dice with pluses and minuses. It's a much more role-playing intensive, not as heavily relying on dice.
And we're going to play True 20 at some point.
Yes, my next D&D campaign will be a True 20 game. And I really like True 20. I think it takes everything that sucked about D20 and throws it out the window.
Good. Which means it's more like Mutants and Masterminds, which is an incredible D20 system.
Hero Games has a lot... Ever since Hero Games actually came out with their newest edition, they've cleaned up their stuff a lot. They have some really nice source material in there. Ultimate Skill is supposed to be just a fantastic book. There are any number of ones. I personally would have to go with either... I really like True 20, although I think True 20 still sort of lends itself more to a fantasy setting, but you could use it for modern. I don't think anything D20, True 20 oriented works well for anything but Mutants and Masterminds and D&D.
That's not true.
I don't think it works as well. Even with Call of Cthulhu, even with games like that.
Modern D20 was very well written.
It is, but the D20, I think, still works best just for D&D, and Mutants and Masterminds managed to be the gem that popped out that's not D&D. I think, though, if I was going to go with a generic game, I would probably lean more towards GURPS rather than Hero, just because of personal bias. Hero typically has about 4 billion dice you have to roll. I don't know, they may have cleaned that up
GURPS
in the new edition.
GURPS is pretty...
GURPS is pretty simple.
Pretty straightforward.
It's straightforward. The only problem I have with it is that since it's so open-ended, there's so much you can do with the character creation that it can be a slightly daunting task for a new person because...
It also depends on the GM. If the GM gives you a good amount of restrictions, you're going to be good. But
when we played that Stargate game under a friend...
Under Ben?
Yeah. I was really intimidated by the list of skills
also,
that we had to choose from.
Oh,
it's
a skill-intensive system.
Yes.
I don't know. I kind of disagree with the Dice 20... thing. I think it can be used. I just don't think it's been written. I don't think anything's been written that well. But in this case, I haven't played a True 20 yet, and I can't say I've played the Fudge. I would probably go with GURPS just because I know more about it, and I like... There's something about GURPS books that just kind of... It's not that they're great, but they fit in a special little place somewhere in your heart. Unlike Palladium books where you're just like, God, why don't you stop? GURP books, you're like, that's GURP's Cops. That's like the TV show, Cops.
Yeah.
Or GURP's Goblins.
There's so many resource books for GURPS. There's a GURP's Prisoner, God's sake.
Come on.
It's not in print anymore, but there's a GURP's Prisoner.
That's
and anyone
kind of,
who knows what the Prisoner is can go, whoa, there's a GURPS Prisoner.
That's kind of awesome, actually. In its own
There was a GURPS Conan. There was a GURPS Supers. There's GURPS Wild Cards.
GURPS is just Deadlands book.
Yeah, GURPS Deadlands, GURPS Werewolf, GURPS Vampire, GURPS Deadlands Hell on Earth. Good lord.
GURPS is...
They GURPSed everything. GURPS Cyberpunk. Heck, that got him in trouble with the FBI.
I believe when
Why did he get in trouble with the FBI?
Because
that's a long story.
I believe when you break reality down, just basic parts, and you stop talking about M-theory, what you're going to find is GURPS.
Yes, they're gonna crack open DNA and finally write out the whole human genome, and it's a GURPS book.
I think at first they'll think it's palladium, and they'll be like, no, that's too lame.
No,
it's GURPS.
Wait, no, it's not rifts. Okay,
no,
it's GURPS. Okay,
GURPS. That makes sense.
So I think we're all sort of leaning towards GURPS.
Yeah, GURPS is kind of like the All Father. Yeah. You're like, you're smelly and you need to stay over there, but you're kind of cool in that creepy old
yes.
Jedi sort of way.
It's that guilty pleasure that we're like,
you're evil, but you're kind of cool. Don't eat my soul.
Agreed.
I agree too. I would recommend checking out 220 and GURPS. That is my recommendation. I have not played 220 yet, but I have gone through the character creation with the little tutorial thing they have online.
The book looks nice.
The book looks absolutely.
I'm not so sure about the magic part.
I think the magic system's cool.
My magic system's going to be different from what I have anyway.
I think the magic system's cool.
System.
The problem is it lends itself more to an environment where magic is uncommon. GURPS, yeah, you can do anything with GURPS. They even have a Middle Earth. You can play Middle Earth. Play Tolkien's Lord of the Rings style.
There's
game.
So much GURPS stuff online too. It's
there's
ridiculous.
Thousands of books. I think there's thousands of.
You can get
books
old edition books and still use them with the new edition. I mean, GURPS is, yeah.
I think
everything goes back to GURPS.
I think really everybody writes a GURPS book.
Yeah.
We've probably written a GURPS book.
We just
don't know it.
No, yeah. It's out there somewhere. But
yeah, someone's going to come and go, did you know you wrote a GURPS book? I must have done it in my sleep. I don't remember.
And a lot of times the GURPS books are nice source material for other games.
Yeah. You can use them because it's a
generic. Oh, all the time.
Because
yeah. GURPS, GURPS China is a great book.
Yeah, don't you use that when you do feng shui?
I have used it. I'm actually, my brother's sending me my copy. So.
Sweet.
But anyway, GURPS is, I think, where we go with that. But
yes.
If you guys out there have a universal system that you guys like, please, hey, drop a line on the forums. Give us a call on our voicemail.
Yeah, we'll actually, why don't we, when we're done with this, why don't we just hop on the forums real quick and create a...
there already is. This is the topic.
Yeah. Oh, he created
the
topic.
Or try Brick Wars.
Yeah, Brick Wars is cool. I'll put a link
to
that in
the show notes. I need to go make a forum name. So
yes,
I can
you
get
do.
In.
But, yeah, that's about all the random encounters this time. Thanks for listening.
We haven't gotten hate mail yet?
No, not since that one, really. Which really wasn't hate mail. It was just constructive criticism.
Find your pants.
So yeah,
robes,
dude.
When you go out and pop if there's some wind...
Yeah.
Jedi powers won't protect you.
Yeah, no.
And on top of that, when you use your speed run, any woman in front of you is going to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Jedis can be still arrested.
That's true.
Decent
exposure.
Get yourself some pants, man, please. Just, whoa,
if it's really
dude.
That hard and you can't find them, let us know. We'll buy you a pair of pants. Just
yeah.
Your waist
thing,
size.
I live next door to a Walmart. I'll get you some pants,
yeah.
Man, please.
We'll stick them in an interstellar post office box and ship them to you.
But thanks for sending the feedback. Keep them all coming, guys. Thanks.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You can visit our website at www.canadiancrusaders.com. You can leave us an audio, call or voicemail line at 206-338-2414. Visit us on the Frapper map, send us an email, or go by the forums on Fistful of Comics, or go to our website and click on the forums link to get to the forums, and leave us a message there, and we'll get back to you absolutely as soon as we can. Thanks for listening. Gamers Haven Podcast is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution share-alike 2.5 license and is a proud member of the Fistful of Comics podcast audio group. And if you swallow the drug, you'll be fast to die. There's a